Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
And gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, June 7th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, you know, no one really cares that there was only 38,000 jobs created in the U.S., last month. All they needed to hear was the Federal Reserve Janet Yellen express confidence in health of the U.S. economy, but offered no fresh hints on the timing of the next interest rate hike. And that's all the world markets needed was just to hear. Again, we talk so much about confidence. Doesn't matter. Only 38,000 jobs were created. That doesn't mean anything, Al.
Well, that's,
it's all what
that's
comes out of the mouth.
It's irrelevant. We're talking about confidence, which is something subjective.
Yep.
And that's what we are running the economy on.
Absolutely. Yes. So it's whatever comes out of the mouth of Janet Yellen rules the world stock markets. But gold today, it fought. It fought pressures just down a few cents today, holding at 1245. Silver also down just a few cents, six cents at 1648. Platinum was up five at 1005. Palladium was down two at 559. The USDX today, a little pressure, down 0.20 at 93.84. Crude oil finally topped 50. Was up 0.78 at 50.47. And the paper markets today, you had the Dow up 20 points, really off the highs of the day, but still managed to stay up above 20, 17,941. The NASDAQ was down 6, not 49.61. The S&P was up 2 at 21.12. 10-year yield, 1.71%. The euro was still holding 1.14. And Germany was up almost 2%. And again, it's all a matter of everyone knows she's not going to do the rate increase in June. So it doesn't matter why. It's just the rate increase is not going to happen in June. So that pushed the markets worldwide up. There's a world equity index. It's called the MSCI. That tracks about 45 nations, the shares of 45 nations, and that rose to the highest in more than 5 weeks, and it was up 0.63% on pace for its fourth session of gains. So, you know, happy days are here again. But again, you know, when you see these peaks and you see these highs, well, you know what happens when you hit those highs. There's and with gold, there's certainly less risk to the downside. Where the stock markets, the paper markets, certainly that risk to the downside is much greater. So
there's a video that Janet Yellen was of a meeting that an interview that included Janet Yellen, Ben Bernanke, and Paul Volcker. And there's a section in about 2.5 minutes where Ms. Yellen is being interviewed. She's nervous. Maybe she's not used to public speaking. Maybe she's intimidated by the presence of Bernanke and Volcker. Maybe she's lying, and unlike Obama, has little confidence in her ability to lie convincingly. Now, the video is short and fairly dull, but there's a point to noticing that in the context of the video, Mrs. Yellen repeatedly claimed that the United States is not a bubble economy. She said it twice in the 3.5 minutes or 2.5 minutes that she was on there. Not a bubble economy. And my reaction is, you know, I'm looking at that. I'm thinking, seriously, really? You really think it's not a bubble economy? You know, again, I think methinks Ms. Yellen doth protest too much. Let me explain why.
How old was the video?
It was April.
Mm-hmm.
It was April of this year, so.
And she was with Bernanke?
It's going on 2 months. Yeah, she was on stage with Bernanke and Paul Volcker.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Anyway, suppose I maxed out all my credit cards, borrowed heavily from the local bank, and hit up all my friends and fans for every dime I could beg, borrow, or steal. Suppose I used all the money I borrowed to buy a brand new $1 million mansion, a Tesla Model S automobile, and an expensive new wardrobe. Anyone looking at my clothes, my car, my home, would suppose that I must have a pretty good job, a strong income stream, and I must be very prosperous. But what if they learned how little money I actually make and how deeply indebted I was? In fact, I borrowed all the money to buy that house and the car and the clothes, all things done on credit. Do you suppose they'd still think that I was living, that I was really as prosperous as I appeared? Or would they conclude that my prosperity was an illusion based on debt rather than my personal productivity? If my lifestyle was mostly a debt-based illusion, would it be fair to call me a fraud and my lifestyle a bubble that was inflated by debt that was excessive and even irrational since I could never really repay any of it? My first point is this. When we talk about bubbles, they're talking about something that's been inflated to look bigger than it really is. What do we use to inflate bubbles? And the answer is debt. That's what all the bubbles are all about. They are a balloon puffed up with debt. And if the debt stops flowing into the balloon is going to collapse. Now, apply the same principles to the apparent prosperity based on debt in our allegedly strong U.S. economy. Mrs. Yellen, she says, things are going great. You know, we're really... But the official national debt has more than doubled since Obama took office and is now nearly $20 trillion. John Williams talk about it on a regular basis at shadowstat.com. He claims the true national debt is closer to $100 trillion. The Congressional Budget Office, the economist Lauren Kotlikoff, have said that including unfunded liabilities, the U.S. government's true national debt is over $200 trillion. Now, my question to the audience and to Mrs. Yellen is this. How can any rational person claim that despite being built on at least $20 trillion in national debt that won't ever be repaid in full, the U.S. economy is still strong, self-supporting, and definitely not a bubble economy? Of course it's a bubble economy. All modern economic bubbles are built on excess and irrational debt. The bubbles are inflated with debt. Those are mere promises to pay. Hasn't our seemingly strong but overly indebted U.S. economy been inflated, stimulated with excess debt? Obama has doubled the national debt in his 7 years so far in office. Right? That has inflated, that's created a bubble economy. If it wasn't a bubble economy to begin with, it is now. Hasn't our seemingly, when we saw quantitative easing, they pumped in trillions of dollars into the economy. What did that do if not help to create a bubble? And so, from my perspective, the way I look at it, how can Janet Yellen or anyone else claim that the U.S. is not a bubble economy? How can they make that claim and keep a straight face? It is a bubble economy. Look at the debt. If we were making, if this economy was supporting itself based merely on our productivity, and we didn't have to borrow money, or the government didn't have to borrow money, and use that money to stimulate the economy and try to hold things together, I'd say, yeah, okay, we've got a good, strong economy. But the debt itself is proof that we have a bubble economy. And if you've got a bubble economy, if the government say, if our national economy is a bubble economy, our enormous debt again proves that it's a bubble. As such, it's certain to pop. And probably not so long from now. In fact, since the global monetary system is based on debt, the whole global economy is a bubble economy too. And as such, the global economy is also certain sooner or later to pop. And although Janet Yellen has a job to pump sunshine and maintain public confidence in the system and the economy and the currency, truth of the matter is, this whole thing is a production that Lawrence Welk would really appreciate. Somebody turn off the bubble machine, you know?
That's why I like that website, Credit Bubble Bulletin. We've been in a bubble economy much longer than 2008. I mean, and again, I go back to the very beginning of fiat currency. Every recession that we've had, our ability to come out of that recession was all based on newly created debt,
yeah,
which created bubbles to get us out of that recession. So we never really came out of any of those recessions.
I know.
So we've had, going back to recessions of 80s, early 90s, mid 90s, early 2001, 2000, we've never come out of any of those recessions. They've only been glossed over and bubbles have created. Look at the corporate debt that we have in today. They're holding more corporate debt than they do cash. They borrow with these low rates, and they buy back their shares. They borrow to pay dividends, and their debt has created a bubble stock market because there isn't anything real about it, folks.
And Janet says, oh, it's not a bubble economy. That's all it is.
You believe the opposite of what they tell you.
She said it twice in the little interview I was talking about. It's just not true. It's not true. And it's interesting that she would deny it, because it indicates that a lot of people are claiming, oh, it is a bubble economy, and she's hearing those claims, and she says, oh, we've got to defeat this. We've got to try to reassure people that it's not a bubble economy. Yeah, it is. It's all built on debt. That's all they have. Yeah. And it's just going to blow up sooner or later. How soon does it pop? Don't know. But one of the implications, of course, is that while Ms. Yellen and the rest of the wheelers and dealers, while they are trying to assure us that everything is well and the economy is strong and so on, you've got to take personal responsibility. If you're going to wait for Ms. Yellen and people like Bernanke and Paul Volcker and President Obama and the House and the kind of Senate and the rest of that, if you think they're going to save you, you be dumb. It's time you have to take responsibility for yourself and your own survival. And you have to start thinking and acting in a way, even though it may make you anxious, you're going to have to start taking personal responsibility for your own affairs, because if you don't, you're going to get caught like the vast majority of people. When this thing does pop, most people are going to be in a very vulnerable situation. a vulnerable condition, and you can minimize. You can minimize that if you get prepared now.
And I think too, you know, we mentioned last week that it doesn't take a huge catastrophic event to get the ball rolling into today's world. It can just be a little. It could be just a little bump somewhere, and
well,
I think it could bring the whole system down.
We were talking in the context of Janet Yellen on another one of her speeches just this last couple of days, where she's talking about there's so many uncertainties that she can't easily make a move because there are so many uncertainties. What does she mean by uncertainties? She means circumstances that are beyond the control of the government and or Federal Reserve. That's what she's really talking about. And when she's complaining, we were following up and using the analogy of the black swan, and they were saying there's a whole squadron of black swans that are coming in here. And we don't know which one is going to pop our little balloons, but any one of them could. Well, Janet, when she's talking about uncertainties, we were talking about black swans, but what she's really talking about occurred to me earlier today. She's talking about things that they can't control. They see it out there, all right, like the inflation rate or the unemployment rate or the productivity levels or whatever. They see these things, and nothing's popped the bubble yet, but they are not in control. That's why they are uncertainties. That's why she refers to them as uncertainties, or at least that's my strong suspicion. What else, Melody?
We don't talk much about Russia. We don't talk much about, foreign wars and so forth. But I just saw this report that it says Russia deploys troops westward as standoff with NATO deepens. I mean, here's something that comes out of left field. You don't know what's going to happen over there. You know, they're building up troops over there. There's really not a lot of discussion about them, particularly during this election. Things have been sort of put on the, quiet side as the media continues to, focus on this election. But that's just one of the little black swans, little baby swans that could certainly create, a very serious situation. And many people believe there will be war. Certainly if Hillary gets elected, there will be, most likely.
It's hard to say what's going to happen. I don't think we're going to go to nuclear war. I don't think that's going to happen. I think I don't think anyone is crazy enough to do that. But I think in order to avoid nuclear war, we're going to see a lot more small skirmishes. Instead of a big major war, I think we'll see minor skirmishes in different places around the globe. And that's just speculation. We'll watch and see whether that's, whether that turns out to be true or false. But we can't, the world can't afford a World War III. But we can afford an endless stream of little conflicts in Syria and Iraq and who knows where, maybe the South China Sea. Small manageable conflicts. Not too many people get killed. Lots of bombs get expended. Lots of money gets borrowed. I don't know. The whole thing is crazy. The whole thing is insane.
Well, that's really true, Al. How many countries have the money to go to war anymore? They don't.
You don't need money. You need credit.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? The Time magazine put out that set of encyclopedias. They had several sets of encyclopedias 20 years ago, and one of them was the 20th century, the century of war. It was really the century of credit. Right? They are fighting wars with credit. Right? If we had to fight wars just on the resources we have, if we had enough resources to fight a war, enough of a war chest, we'd only accumulate it by taxing our people into poverty.
Yeah.
And if we had that much gold or real resources stored up that the government could afford to go to war, there would be other places, other nations that would want to invade to seize that gold. Becomes almost dangerous to have a mountain of gold. Somebody's going to come try to take it away from it. Credit eases the whole thing. Credit is what makes the world go to war. Right? It's easy because the public doesn't get it. They don't have to pay high taxes to support the war. All right, we'll leave the debt to the kids and the grandkids. Let's take a break. It's time for us to take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Got an article here from ABC News. The headline is Hillary Wins Democratic Party Nomination. It's kind of interesting. This was a little bit premature. It's correct, but it's a little premature when it came out. It says Clinton clinches just barely. Hillary Clinton has exactly enough delegates to win the Democratic nomination, according to ABC News estimates, based on additional superdelegates allotted by the Associated Press Monday night. I don't know how many words are in that sentence, but it's not exactly well written. Hundreds of those included in the count are unbound superdelegates, which means even though she's got enough delegates right now, hundreds of them, in theory, could change their minds. They're not really assigned to her just yet. All right, they're being counted, but it's not a guaranteed deal. But even losses in California and elsewhere for Clinton today, while not anticipated, will not change the outcome. This leaves Clinton the presumptive Democratic nominee for president, and makes her poised to become the first woman to secure a major party presidential nomination in American history. Notably and coincidentally, today marks the 8th anniversary of the day that Clinton got out of the race against Barack Obama. And the famous speech about cracks in the glass ceiling after it became clear that Obama had a sizable majority of pledged delegates. This goes back 8 years ago. Even with enough delegates, she is still not the nominee. He or she is chosen next month in Philadelphia. What's next for Sanders? Bernie Sanders is under no obligation to drop out after Tuesday. Or for that matter, after June 14th, when the last round of primary voting takes place in the District of Columbia. He is free to make his case to superdelegates who are not obligated to formally commit to a candidate until the convention in Philadelphia. Sanders has criticized the use of superdelegates regularly during his campaign speeches, but delegate math makes it clear that it's impossible for him to secure a majority of delegates without using some superdelegates of his own. Barring a blowout tomorrow by Clinton, either she or Sanders would need the support of superdelegates to secure an outright majority at the convention. And what they're saying here, what they appear to be saying is, even though Hillary is technically won the nomination, she hasn't actually won it yet. And it could go either way. And depending on what happens with the superdelegates, apparently, this is going to be a contested convention. The Democratic National Convention is going to be contested. That's the implication. While Bernie Sanders continues to try to make his pitch for superdelegates to come over to his side rather than to Hillary's side, and as long as that's still a live issue, we are perhaps going to see a contested Democratic National Convention, which is, I don't know. It's interesting. It's fascinating. You know, we have a national election that if someone had written this up 2 or 3 years ago and said, well, we're going to have this billionaire who's going to defeat 16 Republican candidates. He's never been to hold political office, but he's going to defeat all these governors and senators and whatever because the public really likes him. And then we're going to have some crooked woman who was trying to be the first woman president for the Democrats. And then we're going to have Bernie, the socialist. He's going to be there. And we're going to have the Republican Party admit, they're going to admit that in order to prevent this billionaire from getting the nomination, they're prepared to expose the fact that the votes of the people who think they're part of the Republican Party don't really count in the primaries. It's up to the establishment to decide who's going to be nominated, who's not going to be nominated. And the Democrats have done virtually the same thing. If you tried to put that together in a novel, people say, oh, that's crazy. Nobody believed that. And yet here we are living in it.
Don't forget.
And this is just extraordinary.
Don't forget the third party libertarian guy that's running.
I ran as a libertarian for the Texas Supreme Court.
I mean, I saw my first interview with him, and we do have a caller that we should get to. I saw his first interview last night. I just don't pay much attention to the libertarians, and well, if you're a libertarian listener, I don't mean that in a negative way. I follow a little bit, but not a whole lot. And it was sort of funny because they asked him about his marijuana usage. And he admitted, he says, I'm a recreational user of marijuana.
What state is he from?
New Mexico. He was the twice governor of New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, yeah, it's been 5 weeks since I've used. And I'm thinking, you know what? He just fits right in with all the.
I know, the whole thing. What a circus.
Right in.
This is the greatest show on earth. Arnim and Bailey would just say, oh my God, we never put on anything like this. And Trump He has said that the Republican, he has actually said that the Republican convention, the national convention, it would be the greatest show on earth. I mean, he's going to put on a circus there. That's his intent. I don't know what's going to happen, but this is one to remember, to tell the kids, the grandkids. This is something I don't think we'll ever see again. We've got a caller, Jerry from South Dakota. Hello, Jerry. How are you?
Hi, Al. Melody, I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I'm saddened to hear about Jim's passing. I put a lot of faith in comments he had. But I wanted to, you've been talking about the economy and debt, and I think we have a real crisis coming up on us in the farm economy. I've been to a couple farm auctions, and the absolute bottom has dropped out of the farm implement market. You can buy state-of-the-art. Pardon?
Well, when you say the bottom has dropped out of the farm implement market, are you saying that instead of buying new farm implements, new tractors or whatever, that the farmers that are still semi-prosperous, they are feeding off the farmers who have gone broke, and they're buying their tractors for a dime on the dollar?
There's no
Therefore,
one.
Or they
to
don't
buy
need a new one because they're taking advantage of the used ones that are available?
Right. Well, they are to some extent, but there is no market out there hardly for. You can buy state of the art conventional equipment now. Now, I'm not talking about big stuff, but smaller items. Like if you wanted to get started in farming or something like that, you can buy them for almost scrap iron price. I'll give you an example. A while back, I bought a Cincinnati horizontal milling machine. This is about 7 foot tall machine, weighs about 1,400 pounds for $100.
Yeah.
And that tells me that there's no one out there that's really interested in doing anything.
Yeah.
Well, you know, farmers have, there's been a big slump in the banks. They're not, you know, they're tightening the credit for farmers. There's been a rise in delinquencies. You have forcing some of these farmers to turn to alternative sources so they can't get loans for these equipments. We talked about this, I believe, last week where, just like anything else, you know, it was booming. The agriculture department or area was booming, and the banks dished out a lot of credit, and now they got weaker. And now, you know, the banks are not lending. They're tightening the credit. And this is the third year that the farms have been having troubles. And it's some of these growers are finding it difficult to have the collateral. And, you know, they can't pay for seeds. They can't pay for chemicals. They can't pay for the rent.
And that's kind of the crisis I'm referring to in the near future. Most of these farmers have been buying their success, and they're very dependent on the chemical companies. And if this thing dwindles down to where they can't afford to get this stuff, that their inputs that they need, there's no one to take over. There's a very few younger generation out there to take over.
Yeah, that's true.
How
soon do you think we're going to see the consequences of what you perceive to be happening in the farming community? How soon before it impacts on the majority of the American people, where we can see it and all of a sudden people say, oh, my God, look at the prices?
Well, that's one of those things. It's hard to tell, but I think it could happen quite rapidly because once the production is curtailed, there's not a lot in the pipeline anymore. You know, we don't have the farm commodity storage that we used to have.
I understand. And it won't be something that you just, you know, shut her down. It's like turning off the computer at night before you go to bed. And in the morning you can turn it back on again. It's not that simple with a farm. You don't just turn it off and say, well, we're just going to let it go for a year or two and then we'll turn it back on. It won't be quite that easy.
No, it won't come back up. When I was younger and coming back to the farm, there were thousands of young people moving back to the farm. Mm-hmm. Now, they're all, well, I got three kids. They got all got a college education. They're all more interested in their smartphones. They're really not interested in food production anymore.
I understand. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no need for them to be because they've been, you know, sort of conditioned knowing that you have all the fast food restaurants. You know, there's restaurants on every corner, and they've, you know, sort of missed part of the illusion that there'll never be any shortages of food. There's really no need for farms because all these restaurants have food. They don't know where the food really comes from anymore. It's not recognized.
It's not just knowing where it comes from. They take it for granted that it will always be here. They don't understand the urgency behind this, and that's not going to be easily communicated. I mean, it's almost like a draft. So, look, you got to go work on a farm, so we've got some food to eat. They say, "Hey, forget that. I'm gonna go play a video game. I don't have time to be on the farm." My dad had he bought a retirement farm back in the 70s, and I worked on it for a while. He had a couple hundred head of Black Angus cattle, and I took care of them and blah blah blah. But in the process, at the time, I'm not a farmer, and but I studied the issue to some degree, and I remember that at the time they calculated that if you wanted to build up a farm, I'm trying to think, maybe it was even in the 60s when he started that farm, but if you wanted to build up a farm that would generate the $25,000 a year income, you had to have an initial investment of $150,000 in land and equipment. Now, that's different money scale than we have now, and I think it was actually in the 60s when I think about it, rather than in the he kept it into the 70s and so on. But the point I'm trying to make is what it came down to at the time, you could make as much interest off the investment. You take that $150,000, invest it in the bank, at that point in time, you could make as much off the interest on that principle as you could make by investing it into a farm and working 40, 50 hours a week, maybe 60 hours a week. The implication was the farmer then was work, his time was for nothing. Now, not the same mathematics today. I understand that, but this has not been a really lucrative situation for family farmers for a long time.
Well, even if they did really want to farm someone, a younger person, if they could borrow the money, for instance, they couldn't even pay the interest.
Yeah.
Make enough money off it to pay the interest right now.
You have so many of these farms that are subsidized, you know, to the wealthy. Have Monsanto in there, you know. So I mean, it's hard for farmers, and you know, it's.
And you've got to compete with the big corporate farms and the rest of that sort of thing, which makes it very difficult, challenging.
I thought I'd just give you a heads up that might be something you want to keep an eye on because I think we're heading for a crisis in that area.
Oh, I agree. I think we're headed. This is another one of.
It's another bubble.
We're talking about these uncertainties and black swans and whatever. This is just one more to add to the list. And you keep on stacking them up and stacking them. And pretty soon you can figure, you know, the black swan that broke the camel's back, that's where we're going right now. We're going to finally get to the one that's going to do some real damage, and when that happens, we're all going to be surprised, shocked, and we won't be pleased. How long do you think it will be before it turns around? We've got like 15 seconds left. Do you want to hang on till we get back from the commercial break?
Oh, I can. Sure.
All right, why don't you do that, Jerry? Hold on for a couple of minutes. We're going to take a break. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a couple of minutes with Jerry from South Dakota. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we're talking to Jerry from South Dakota about what may be an approaching crisis in American agriculture. What do you think, Jerry? What do you think's happening to the if the prices of farm implements are way down? What's happening to the price of farmland? A lot of people in the last few years have talked about investing in farmland, and they thought it was a good idea. What do you think is that? And it's going to go down, presumably. You can
it's
correct
trending
me.
Trending down, no.
How long do you think it might be before it has to go back up?
That's a good question. Myself, I don't see it turning around. I don't see any future in our society where we got the means or the ambition or the interest to turn it around.
Mm-hmm.
The people aren't interested in it. You know, the
yeah, but they're going to get interested when they start starving. I mean, you got to have food, and I guarantee you, even people that have Xboxes and the rest of that are going to sit down. Huck, I got to put this game away for a while, and I've got to grow some tomatoes or something. We've got to have something to eat.
But you got to have some land too.
Well, I know.
And How I don't know how these people are going to attain that land other than people who have a family that's connected with a farm.
Yeah.
There may be a process there that can work, but right around here in our area, you know, our population is going down. A lot of these small towns, a third of the houses are empty.
Yeah.
Because the kids are migrated to other parts of the country. I don't see much of a future.
It sounds like the sort of scenario that we might have noticed during the Great Depression. I mean, we had the Dust Bowl, and we had people leaving Oklahoma to go to California, and a lot of people got wiped out. They were wiped out who were in agriculture, farmers and whatever. It turned around. It has to turn around sooner or later, but...
Well, you hear that a lot, you know, about the 30s and what happened in the 30s, but I see that as a completely different scenario because we had millions of acres of trees to harvest. We had tons and tons of iron ore to mine, and we had a whole growing economy, and we don't have any of that anymore.
Yeah. Well, we live in interesting times, Jerry, and interesting in the sense of being dangerous.
Well,
you know, it's almost astonishing. How can people be so stupid? How do we let our farms disappear on us, Jerry? How can that be excused? How can it be explained? Is it just an accident? Is it stupidity? Or are there people that are working to make this happen?
Well, a lot of it is like back when Henry Ford started his motor vehicle business, he paid a lot higher wages than farmers could pay.
Mm-hmm.
And Silicon Valley can pay a lot higher wages than farmers. You know, I'm an old farmer. I'm 74, and I got a lot of experience. I could go out and work for a farmer and make $10 or $12 an hour.
Yeah.
You know, that's about all I'd make. You know, whereas kids can go to school. Well, of course, that's changing now too. That's another scenario. You know, that's got to figure in is the college debt crisis, and what are these kids going to do? You know,
they're not going to pay the debt. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, they'll just write that debt off.
Yeah, they can't.
Well, they'll default on it.
It's like 40% right now, if I understand correctly, are defaulting on the debt. And I won't be surprised if it goes to 60-70% before it's all over. Just crazy times, insane times. Again, lesson, you got to take care of yourself. Clearly, the government's not going to work on our behalf. They're doing stupid things. They're either indifferent to the truth or they are opposed to the truth. But if you want
know,
to take care of yourself, if you got to be the one responsible to do that.
Well, another part of the problem, I remember growing up going to the grocery store with my grandparents. You know, you didn't have watermelons in the wintertime. We started importing all this food from all around the world. We started, you know, importing more food than we exported. And I mean, and it's just like it became so imbalanced. And, you know, let's just follow the mighty dollar. Let's find out who makes, you know, with these multinational corporations. They wanted the farms to fail because they didn't make any money. You know, you talked about going out, being able to make $10 an hour, maybe getting a job, but, you know, that illegal alien, you know, will take your same job for probably a little bit less than that. So, you know, it's, I do believe it was designed, it was an agenda to make these farms fail. Look what they've done to our lands. Look what they've done, I mean, to the soil. I mean, it's, you know, and like what you mentioned, yeah, we don't have the storage facilities. It was all by design. All by design.
Anything else, Jerry, that you'd like to add?
I think that's about all I can say for now.
Appreciate it,
Jerry. Appreciate the call and appreciate the information. We'll keep an eye on American agriculture, and we'll watch what happens over the course of the next months. And just another one of those black swans.
Well, look at Venezuela.
Yeah.
You know, where's their food come from?
I know.
How do they get their food? You know, so
they're starving to death.
Starving.
In what is apparently, I mean, I've never been to Venezuela, but I assume this is a tropical country. You would suppose that it's not too hard to grow crops there. Now, that's not necessarily true. They have some tropical countries that are, the soil is terribly depleted and, you know, it's very vulnerable. But just the same, you'd think these people ought to be able to grow some food of their own. They should be able to raise some cattle or something, and some of them are out eating dogs and cats.
Oh, wow, that would never happen here in the United
States.
Oh,
yeah. Uh-huh. You better say that, Ruby, because your Ruby is listening. That's why Melody is saying that.
Well, I'm saying that.
Ruby is the dog. Ruby is Melody's dog. We would never eat a dog.
That's what people think, Al. Never here in the States. That'll never happen here.
I understand. Well, we'll see. Let's hope. Let's hope that's correct. Let's hope that never is absolutely correct. But the truth of the matter is, the last time we had a depression, I don't know what the real number was, but it may be that half the people in the country were living in a rural environment. Right now, I doubt that it's 5 or much more than 5, 10% maximum that are living in a rural environment, probably down in the neighborhood of 5%.
Hey, you know what? Populations, you know, their idea is to deplete the population. You know, and to me, I think it's all part of it. I can remember people writing articles about, you know, I can remember back in the 90s, it was Walmart. Walmart was the government store. Walmart was going to be the company and the place that, you know, people would go to get their food because the food would be rationed. And then you sort of seen, you know, where you have Jenny Craig's and, you know, all this food that delivers to your home. That was another training type program to ration food, you know, a system to be in place to actually would, you know, the food would be rationed to the people and that food would come from the government. And of course, it ties to Monsanto and everything to, you know, hey, the food will kill you. So again, it's, you know, people say, oh, well, that's really crazy.
Not if you take a vaccine, Melody.
Take the vaccine.
Have a vaccine to protect you against the food.
But I mean,
let's
truly,
see, we'll have one to protect you from GMO corn and another one to protect you from GMO rice and another one from GMO tomatoes.
Right,
you'll probably need 25 or 30 vaccines to protect you.
But really, when you hear about the stories, even you think, well, you know, back then it might have been a conspiracy and so forth. But really, it seems like that's the kind of the direction that it could very easily be headed.
Yeah, you see these things, and it's hard to believe what you're looking at. And it's one of the things, you know, you look at these things, and you want to give government or people in positions of power the benefit of the doubt. Say, well, they're not really trying to wreck this country. They're just some inadvertent consequences, collateral damage that happens from time to time. But you keep looking, and you keep looking, and you keep looking, and it's hard to simply ignore the possibility that maybe they really do want to destroy this country. As preposterous as that idea seems, you keep looking and you see it. Because when do you see that people in positions of power are doing what's right for the American people? It's almost unknown. Where do you see it? It's for special interests. It's for the upper tenth of a percent, the upper 1%, maybe in the top 10%. They're getting over. The majority of the American people are being left to shift for themselves. And it can't end well. That's got to change. There's got to be something, and it can't be, you can't just sit back and say this is an accident or we'll do something for the majority here one of these days. They haven't done anything for the majority in maybe decades.
These multinational corporations, these banks, these, you know, the powers, the elite. You know, and yes, I don't believe every politician in Washington, when they make those decisions, actually, you know, thinks that it's a way to destroy this country. But I do believe that just by the sheer, I do believe by the sheer amount of greed and you know, with these multinational corporations and being globalized and knowing what the elite want with if you believe in a one world government and if they believe in, you know, a one world a monetary policy and so forth, that is part of the agenda to destroy this country. And I do believe there are a select group that absolutely that is their agenda.
George Soros would agree with you. He said his big objective was to destroy the United States.
But it's he's not a congressman from the state of Alabama that
no, but he can buy
know,
as many. He's got enough money to buy as many as he needs. I mean, he may not be a congressman, but you don't need to if you got enough money to buy them.
But no, I do believe it is a agenda intentionally to destroy this country.
Why do you think it is? I think the answer is because this country is one of the very few that might be able to stop the New World Order. But if this country were destroyed, if it were balkanized by bringing in enough people, legal or illegal, into this country to set it down where we've got so much, it's no longer a homogenous nation and whatever. Under those circumstances, we start fighting amongst ourselves, and we don't have time to fight with the New World Order. I think it's been designed in order to eliminate the possible competition, the one of the very few, maybe the only nation that could exist, New World Order.
Well, I think it's all about control, and I think it's all about going back again. I'm going to turn it back to taking away our gold standard. It was a system. And I do believe we're conditioned. I do believe, not everyone, because we wouldn't be doing this programs if that conditioning affected us, but I do believe there's a conditioning. I do believe there is an agenda and a conditioning to the people. And it started with our monetary policy, the growth of government. They're very patient. They've waited, I believe they waited hundreds of years to get to this point.
Which tells us what? They're not motivated by ordinary greed. These people that we're dealing with are motivated spiritually, right? You don't have generation after generation working for some goal that is contrary to the majority of people's best interests. It's not just ordinary greed. It's not just ordinary ego ambition. It is something moves them from a spiritual level where they are running their own kind of holy war against this nation. From my perspective, at the top of the New World Order, look closely, and I expect to find Satanists up there or something very similar.
It is spiritual, but it's the wealth and the power that is their reward here on Earth.
It may be, but there's still...
Well, no, it is.
The motivation to me is not just ordinary greed. It's not just a bunch of characters like Al Capone who've decided they can run Chicago or they can run Illinois or they can run the country. That's not just what... We're not just dealing with gangsters. They look like that. I don't mean that they're averse to being.
Oh, I
gangsters.
Very much believe that they know what they're doing in the spiritual world on the evil side. But still, it is the wealth and the power that gives them their ability to.
I get that. But it's not the objective from my perspective. I think they're working for spiritual reasons because otherwise, that you get a big car, you get a big house, you get a bunch of young women chasing you around. How much more do you need? A spiritually motivated man, he's looking to take over the world, change it for
but
whatever.
But you need that wealth in order to change it.
No, I understand.
That's my point. And it is part, you know, so. Because I do believe it is spiritual. I mean, there is nothing else that makes any sense unless it is spiritual. So it is spiritual.
Hard to believe.
You can call it whatever you want. Politics, you can call it, you know, whatever. But it is spiritual.
Yeah, at the bottom, I think that's what it is. So we are actually engaged in a holy war here, ladies and gentlemen, and a lot of people would say that's a crazy comment, but from my perspective, it's actually kind of reassuring. If these people really are Satanists that are trying to put the world, put the New World Order together and impose it upon us, it's evidence that God is real, right? These people aren't Satanists unless they really believe or perhaps even know that God is real. This spiritual warfare is encouraging to me because it tells us God is real. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and Jerry from South Dakota. Thank you, folks. Good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.